ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week is part two with Dr. Travis Dorsch. In part one, we talked about the return on the investment, the myth in youth sports, why the real value isn't about scholarships or trophies, but the lessons our kids carry with them. Today, we take this conversation deeper, and we break down how parent communication with their athlete, what healthy culture looks like inside a club, and why letting kids fail might be the best thing we can do for them. From our sideline behavior to social media, from accountability partners to long-term love of the game, this episode is about redefining what success looks like for family coaches and the culture of youth sports itself. Let's start this chat and head to the pitch. We talked about earlier about goal setting. What is the, with communicating with our athletes, what is the number one thing we get wrong? Or is it, or does it go back to the goal setting?
That's a great question. A really important question. I think we as parents, as adults, get it wrong because we tend to assume that our children have an adult lens on the world and they don't. We have such worldly experience. We know that winning matters, right? Whether you're applying for a job or asking someone to marry you or playing sports, we know that getting the outcome you want is an important skill. Kids don't yet have that experience, and it develops slowly over time. So I think that adult lens suggests that we view our young people as miniature adults. Dan Gould in 1982 wrote a really interesting piece called, I'm going to paraphrase because I forget the exact title, but it was basically like, our young athletes are not miniature adults. And as you might guess, the whole point of this thought piece was we need to stop treating 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds as adults who view the world as adults, who need to pursue outcomes like adults. We need to let them be kids. And I think that's been a pervasive message that's fallen on sometimes on deaf ears over the years, because we just assume that our kids view the world the same way we do. And again, this is where we circle back to that idea of communication, to that idea of taking a deep breath, to that idea of where you open, and that is chilling out and understanding that we need to actually flip that script, and we need to, on the sports sidelines, view the world as a kid might. They're just out there having fun, running around, looking at the clouds, picking the dandelions, hanging with their teammates, right? And that's all okay. And it doesn't mean we can't coach and teach and support when things go well and correct when things go poorly, but we have to navigate that really carefully as parents and make sure, again, what I said earlier, that our kid comes back next year.
I think that's always missing. So I'm going to ask two questions in one. So I'm trying to get my brain, making sure I'm getting everything I want hit here. We as parents tend to cross the line too much. We've talked about this. I know that I like my behavior on the sideline with the officials is a great example. I always like using myself because I don't like pointing blame on someone else. But my behavior tends to cross the line. Even though it's supposed to be in good intention, I always say it's about my own ego. It's not about my son. I'm learning. And how, when do our good intentions cross the line? And when are ways that we can give parents guidelines not to be too involved into it? Because I think those two intersect with each other, because our good intentions tend to be sometimes too much.
Yeah, crossing the line is an interesting one. And I'll say that we all do it. So rather than start there, I'll start with your second question. And I think a really positive thing that all parents can do is to have an accountability partner that's not your spouse or partner. Having another parent on the team that can support you in your parenting journey, that can support your kid in their athlete's journey. I think back to a story. My dad was my little league coach and my high school baseball coach. And in both scenarios, there was an assistant coach who was the father of another kid on the team. And they agreed early on, either by chance or by intuition, or I don't know how they figured this out, but that the other dad would coach the other dad's kid, right? The assistant coach was my main sort of point of contact, and my dad was the point of contact. And what that allowed them to do is divest themselves of all that emotion of being a dad and focus on being a coach. Now, I'm giving you an example of being a parent coach, and that's a role that a lot of parents take on, especially earlier in the youth sport journey. But let's say you're just a parent and you're just on the sidelines. Having that accountability partner, another dad or another mom that's on the sidelines and that you trust, and that it won't feel like you're being attacked if they come to you with something and say, hey, yo, like, I watched your son's reaction when you were yelling at the refs, and it obviously affected him. And that means a lot to you then, and it doesn't feel like you're being attacked. And it allows you to recalibrate before you go have that conversation with your kid. So I think there's a lot of power in that kind of accountability partner opportunity. I think parents are so close as it is in many cases on the sidelines, on these club teams, especially when you're traveling the world together, that finding somebody that if your child needs some support or needs to talk to somebody and you're not the right person, that that parent could be. And if you need some recalibrating on your behaviors or your emotions, that parent can come to you and help you out in that regard. So that's maybe the most powerful tool that I've seen used really effectively for parents.
I really like that, because it breaks into the parents and the culture within the club and within the team and what you want to carry. For me, culture has been a journey for this last 8-9 months. I've been on this culture kick and trying to figure out how to build or hold my son's coaches to accountability to bringing in better culture, because I truly now believe culture wins. It can make or break an athlete if it's done wrong, but culture at the end of the day creates winning teams. If you look at the Miracle on Ice, I'm going to use hockey because that's a great example. The culture those players had coming into the Olympics. If you look at Michael Jordan, the culture, if you look what he had around him, if you look at Kobe Bryant, these big name athletes, they all carried a culture and expectations, but the coaches brought that culture in and found players that fit that culture. Didn't mean the players got along by any means. They fit the culture. And I think that is a huge part we as parents need to understand and bring into things. And this comes into a very important topic of culture and teaching parents. So what surprised you the most when you run your parent education programs? Because I've actually gone through your whole entire parent education program out of curiosity, whatever I had access to at the time. And I always like it because it makes me take a step back. But the question is, implementing those habits?
I think the thing that struck me the most is that parents have the potential to be very reflective, but often choose not to be. When you ask parents to think about their role as a sport parent, they can be really, really genuine and reflective and thoughtful about their roles and the importance of what it is they're doing. But oftentimes it's so hectic, right? You're leaving work, you're picking the kid up, you're getting to the game, you're getting him to training, you're traveling to the tournament. And it's just like more thing in our busy lives that we have to do that we're not really reflecting on it like we might on our job at work or like we might in our marital relationship, other things that we value and might reflect on. So giving parents, I think, the opportunity and the space to just reflect on what their goals are, what their communication looks like with their kids, how their all of that aligns or doesn't with their coaches and clubs, I think can be really powerful. Their reflective space.
I like that. And that leads into parents reflecting. So when kids are going through the process of, I shouldn't say athletes, but when parents are doing their research, trying to provide the buffet of information to their kids, as I like to say it the best way, when they are going through tryout seasons, how would you advise small clubs or clubs in general that are trying to make a difference or to make a difference? Because right now I know several DOCs that want to change the landscape, but they can't break the ingrained unhealthy parent education that's out there.
It's a really good point. So I'm our club director for our ski club here in town, and we run on about 1/10 of the budget of the bigger clubs in Salt Lake City and Park City. And I think your point from earlier is rings true, and that is culture is king. Culture is free if done right. You know, the team dinners, the team get-togethers, the emails after successes, both athletic and personal, just being a family. And that's really easy to say. I think it's harder to do. It can feel disingenuous, I think, if done wrong. But when people truly come together and care about each other, that's perhaps the most powerful bond, I think, in human nature. And so starting with the culture and letting everything else build from there can be really powerful for small clubs with low budgets, because you can't buy all those opportunities, those competitive opportunities that great coaches even. So that's, I think, where we hang our hat is build the culture first. And if you build it, they will come. That's a, you know, field of dreams mindset, and see where it goes. And at some point, my kids are likely going to have to go ski for a bigger club on a bigger mountain. But for now, it suits them perfectly and it suits our family perfectly.
That being said, do you think it sets up the expectations so when the parents go to those bigger clubs or the bigger organizations, or if they do make that big jump to the pro level, the foundation's there for them already of culture?
Yeah, I think that's super important. And then you hope that you've planted a seed now that they take to their new club and that seed sprouts and grows. I think I've seen it happen where one new athlete can either make or break a team's culture. Bring a new athlete in who is a dumpster fire and it's going to bring everybody down with them. You bring a new athlete in who has all those right tools and skills and it's going to raise all the boats. And I think starting with culture can be really powerful in that regard.
I like that. As that being said, how would you evaluate if culture and education is being done correctly, or how can you give feedback on if it's being done so people understand what they're saying?
Yeah, I think just figure out what's important to you, whether that's at the club level, at the family level, or at the athlete level. Figure out what's important. What are your goals? Where's the alignment there? And then measure that, right? Measure it before any intervention takes place. Measure it during that intervention, and then measure it maybe postseason after any intervention, and see what the trajectory, what the trend lines are to those things that you value. And it might be a parent-child relationship. It might be respect for those authority figures. It might be learning skills, right? Sport-related skills. But like all the things that you think are important, just measure them, and then you can assess whether or not a program is working.
You've broken, with all this being said, you've broken down the parenting eras of parenting. What is the toughest habit today for parents need to
unlearn? Oh boy, that's a great question. I think it's that we don't want our kids to fail. I really do. We don't give our kids the space to fail. And that goes back to the story you were sharing earlier about our generation being allowed to go outside and build forts and wander too far from home and play in the trees where there might have been rattlesnakes and do all those things where we might have had to learn on the fly. We might have had scrapes on our knees and elbows when we got home, but we were going to figure it out and be all the better for it. Now we wrap our kids in bubble wrap so much that they're not allowed to learn how to fail effectively. When we send them off to college, we've created a generation of really smart, really motivated young people who aren't really good at getting bad news, who aren't really good at dealing with failure. And so I would suggest for all parents out there in sport and out of sport, just give your kids spaces to learn, to grow, to fail, and figure things out on their own. I'll give you a prime example. When we travel, and this goes to a story you shared earlier, actually, but when we travel, we'll get to the airport and we'll make it through security and we'll go to the big televisions and we'll tell our kids where our gate is. We're at B7. Say, get us there. And so Josie will go to the TV and she'll find our destination city and our airline and she'll figure out where we're going. And then she'll look at the signs and figure out how do we get to B7. And one time she transposed B whatever for A and she got us in the completely wrong terminal. Rather than correct her, we walked to the damn wrong terminal. I knew we had time. I checked the watch, but it was important for her to learn that lesson that you need to be careful when you're looking at the terminal, not just the number, but it's also the letter. And so we walked the wrong terminal and she looked up and she said, this isn't where we're going. And I said, what gate were we going to? It took her about 10 seconds and she said, ah, the light bulb went off. And so we had to backtrack and go back to the other terminal. And so that was a great lesson for her, right? And just a small way to allow someone to fail in a safe way, a safe space where it didn't affect our travel plans, that would teach her a lesson that helps her down the road. And I think we can do that in sports. I think we can do it out of sports. Rather than being that snowplow parent that's removing all those obstacles, we can just be traversing maybe in the snowplow with our child and teaching them how to run the blade.
I think that's the hardest thing. I think it goes back to what you said. We don't want our kids to fail. I remember my son started to mow helped me mow the yard a few years ago. And now he mows majority of the backyard. I don't like him mowing on this. It's just my fear of the lawnmower falling over but on the slope. But I will eventually, when he gets a little bit older, allow him to mow on our little bit of a slope we have on our side yard. But he mowed the whole entire backyard this past weekend. And as a parent, I finally felt like he gets it. But I don't have to ask him. He wants to come out and help.
Right.
And I think, I don't know what I did to get the kid that wants to help me mow because I hated mowing as a kid. So did something right there. At the end of the day, like you said, it's getting out of the way, letting them learn and letting them and not being, I like the snowplow analogy. I think helicopter parents aren't, it's not the same. Snowplowing, you just want to clear the path. I think you're onto something with that analogy.
My little guy was helping me load some pea gravel for our landscaping this weekend. And so while I was loading the wheelbarrow, he was loading a little 5-gallon bucket. And then he tried to carry it, which was obviously way too heavy for him. And he tripped over a rock and the bucket spilled over river rocks that were out there. And so in my head, my first reaction was like, what? You're killing me. I had to really quickly contain that and be like, hey, man, I'm really like, that's not ideal, but here's a broom, little hand broom. Pick up as much as you can and we'll just cover up the rest of the river rocks. You're doing great, right? So allowing them to fail when it doesn't matter, when it's not life-threatening, when it's not going to alter your life plans or trajectory, I think can be really powerful. Let your kids fail.
That's a hard one. I'll be honest. As we're going through this, thinking about the image of going on and moving on, the image that we all have is social media. Everyone posts the happy-go-lucky post. No one posts the woe is me post. It's the woe is me post. I should rephrase it. It's not the hard truth. Yeah. We went to a tournament, we lost. Oh, our kids had fun. That's what matters. They don't post that. They don't post anything or they post them winning the medal. And reflecting back, I think my wife does a really good job at this. She posts what our weekend activities are to social media to keep our families informed. And look, Landon went to a tournament this weekend. They lost. But here's some pictures of the tournament. And he had fun. He learned some lessons. He had fun. And here's my daughter. She did a great job in her gymnastics. And she did really great with whatever she was doing. I think we as parents have to look at social media. So how do you view social media making it more complicated for athletes today? Our parents and athletes.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a big, big question, right? It's a societal question that I think has its hand in how young females look at their bodies, how young people look at their efficacy and self-esteem. There's so many to this conversation, but in sports in particular, yeah, I think absolutely we post the best of the best and we leave everything else out. One way that we've tried to get around this is, and to be fair, we haven't posted anything on social media, but my wife and I have a folder on our shared cloud drive that we call Sport Fails. And every time the kids do something that's just ridiculous in sports. So when they were learning to play hockey, they'd do the cartoon feet waving and fall on their back, right? Anytime now they're doing a ski race and they catch an edge and fall and slide down the hill on their face for 100 meters. When they were learning soccer, they'd swing and miss, right? All of these sport fails, we just put them in a folder. And we figure this will do two things. One, it'll help keep them grounded. At some point, we can show all of these to them when they get a little too big for their britches. But also, if they ever achieve anything in sports, wouldn't it be cool to be able to post all of that learning, and I don't like to call it failure, but all of that learning that took place. If my kid were to go ski in the Olympics and I had a bunch of them falling and failing and learning, wouldn't that be cool to show all the other little kids out there that all that failure does take place? And actually, that's how you learn and that's how you grow and develop. So we just have this sort of back channel folder that we've been stockpiling these things in, and someday it'll come to the
fore. I like that. I don't know. As my kids have gotten older, we tend to live in the moment more.
Yeah.
And so we're getting less and less videos and images of them.
Same.
Because we realize we're spending so much time trying to capture every moment of a game. And my wife gives me a hard time because I'll hold the phone up and my head's turned watching the game, and the phone is where I last was looking at the phone.
Right.
And like in high school, I did all the videography. I did all the photography for my school. And it's like, as an adult, like, where did it all go? Because I'm actually enjoying watching.
Sure.
It's in front of me and not paying attention to my phone.
Skiing's a little easier, right? Because you get two runs over the course of a day. So you're literally talking about 3 minutes over 8 hours versus like a team sport game where it's going to be a couple hours straight.
Yeah. So social media, I like how you said you have that the folder to share. And I think we're missing that. I always tell everyone when I hear when we talk social media, there's a coach here. He calls them Gucci parents. Look at my Gucci kid on social media. Look at my latest, greatest thing my kid has done. And we talk heavily about it's great they win. But did they win because they deserve to win, or do they win because they were put in the wrong bracket, or whatever the case may be? And or did they lose because they were in a bigger bracket than they should have been in, or did the team not play as? And it's like, I realize we were getting less and less photos with all this stuff with so far social media. Is there any old school ideas about parenting in sports that's worth bringing back, do you think, dealing with social media being the new and going back?
It's a great question, one that I haven't thought much about. I mean, I think discipline is maybe something that by and large, we don't have as much of today as we did, let's say, two generations ago when our parents were growing up, that if you misbehaved or if you did something that kind of disrespected the name on the back of the jersey, that you would hear about it, that you might feel it on your rear end from mom or dad. And I'm not advocating for that. But I think having discipline in the way that we approach our parenting roles and our expectations for our young people, that the name on the back of the jersey does matter. Just as much as the name on the front of the jersey, that you're representing your team and your family every time you're out there. And that's not to put pressure on kids. Like, it's not, what we don't want to do is make the kid feel like, hey, if you fail, you know, I'm embarrassed as a parent, right? That's not it at all. What it is, hey, go about your daily business the right way. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but at least you can hold your head high at the end of the day and know that there'll be another day coming down the road. And I think that's maybe gone. We live so much in the here and now that we don't have that bigger picture perspective.
I think that goes back to I think it's a culture shift. And I think we're missing, like you said, it's a discipline is missing and the name on the back does matter. But it also goes back to the parents having the same aligned goals as what needs to be. And maybe I'm a little bit more old school or more conservative with my train of thought, but I think that's a huge thing that's missing. With that being said, clubs, teams are a mixed bag of different cultures, different people coming up with their background. How do we provide a fair chance for athletes to have a chance to play or do whatever they have, no matter what their background is?
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
How do we create a chance with, because we're talking about all these other topics with social media and everything else, people's backgrounds, discipline, how do we create an environment or an opportunity for us as parents to help other athletes have the opportunity that might not have the chance? Because that goes back to culture, that goes back to bringing some of those topics all into one. But how do we allow athletes to have a chance, no matter where their background is?
Are you thinking our own athletes or athletes from a different family, other different
families?
I think all of that starts with cheering just as much for your child's competitors as you do for them. And that goes back to the idea of modeling that I talked about earlier on. Ski racing is a great example of that, that there's this little of moms. Now I'm up there coaching, so I don't see it too much, but there's the group of moms of the 5 or 6 best kids in the region, of which my wife Bree is one of those moms. And they all, when the other kids are racing, they're all down there cheering for those other kids, right? Because look, if you win, you want to beat the other kids at their best. Some parents maybe do, but you would never want to root for another kid to fail such that your kid can win. So I think that's maybe where it starts, is just understanding that, hey, we are out here for the good of the kids, for the good of the sport, for the good of our community. And by cheering on all of them, we are modeling the type of behavior that we want to do. Life is not a zero-sum game, right? Life is a game where everybody can have success and we should build and pull each other up. I think that's one anecdote around how that might be itself in action is, gosh, a kid on the other team scores an amazing goal or makes an amazing pass. Cheer for that just like you would if it were your own kid. Maybe not as loud because you don't want to be looked at as that guy. But respect, right? Respect begets respect. And I think to the extent that we can be a little less egotistical about us and our own, and really respect that everybody out there is working hard, that everybody out there wants, is pursuing high levels of success, and drop the respect when it's warranted.
I like that. With that being said, and looking back at everything and going kind of a little bit on a negative side, when parents feel trapped, how do you advise them to get the power back? Because it's all a yin-yang, or whatever you want to call it, balance beam act, being a parent on the sideline encouraging kids, but also you get stuck. And how do you recommend parents feeling unstuck when they get in certain moments? Because at the end of the day, I always feel we're parents helping each other on the sidelines.
Yeah, one way you get stuck, I think, is feeling like you're just on this massive conveyor belt and it's just coming at you faster than you can take it in. Whether that's the bills that are due for your kid to participate, or the number of trainings and competitions, or the fact that you've figured out that your kid's not going to go play in college, but they want to keep playing at this high competitive level in high school that's costing you $10,000 a year, and you got to have a difficult conversation. There's a lot of ways, I think, that parents can feel stuck and trapped. But again, it just circles back to that idea of communication, having those sometimes hard conversations with an athlete or a coach or a spouse, and figuring out like what's the best path forward, and having input from all sides on that. We shouldn't be making decisions alone or just with the marital partnership. It should include the kid. It should include the coach and the club, if appropriate. And nobody wants to be stuck. And I think communication can help alleviate some of that.
So looking at it from a parent perspective, in this case, what would you say a healthy environment for sports look like then?
Yeah, I think a navigatable amount of volunteerism is important, right? So for parents who are stay-at-home parents, they can be putting in a little bit of time to help support the club and team. Parents who are working can do some, but maybe a little less of that work, or work in other ways that help facilitate the club's deliverables. I think helping where you can and where your knowledge is impactful. I'm a sports psychologist, so I do some seminars for our parents. I do some things for other clubs. This goes back to my earlier point. I do things for other clubs. I'm not trying to hide this knowledge. I do things for Snow Basin, for teams in Salt Lake and Park City and Jackson Hole. And I think contributing where you can, how you can, and how much you can. And then just being honest about that, not being the freeloading parent who just shows up for the games, drops the kid off for trainings. I think contributing where you can, offering your knowledge where you can, asking the coach how they can use some help when needed. Something as small as picking them up a drink at the gas station before a match, right? Helping them pop the tent or move the goals, or really anything, something that can make their life just a little bit easier so they can focus on their primary roles. I think just be a helper, right? And this goes back to what do we learn in sports, right? Baseball, you go pick the balls up after batting practice. In football, you get the team manager picking up the footballs and putting them in the bag, right? So just be a helper. Do what it takes to make the team operate. And parents are absolutely part of that equation.
I like that. It restates how I feel. I feel like I'm very mechanically inclined. So if something breaks, I'll go try to figure out how to fix it. And there was my son played for a team and half their goals were broken. So I went and bought the parts, the screws, the bolt. You're talking maybe $15 worth of parts. Fixed the goals for them. Didn't ask anything of it. The coach was kind of taken back that I was willing to do it and not ask for anything. Well, my son's playing for you. You're supposed to be teaching him life lessons. This is the least I can do. And that's the approach I took in that moment. And I agree with you. I think having those volunteering really does go a long way. I'm going to skip some things here. I will ask this. What tips, two or three things you can give parents to do today to be more supportive of their athletes? Because at the end of the day, as they get older, they reflect on these moments. My biggest fear, my kid will resent me for how I treated him playing at his sports, not everything else, but his sports. And because, like I said, my dream is for him to be 80 years old and up still playing soccer and not thinking twice.
Show up, be present when you show up, and celebrate the successes and the failures. So showing up is just that. It means, rather than just drop them and go, it means being engaged, being a part of it, caring, being present. When you show up means you're not on the sidelines on your cell phone. It means you're not taking phone calls or meetings. It means you're not over talking to other parents and not even watching the game. And then celebrating the wins and losses basically means just that. Like when they have a great game, when they score a goal, when they make a great pass, we're celebrating that, but also celebrating the failures or the setbacks, the learning opportunities, right? Those teachable moments that you don't get all the time in real life, especially when you're 8, 9, 10 years old. So celebrating those as opportunities to grow and develop and get better. If you can do those three things, show up, be present, celebrate the wins and losses, I think the journey will be better for it.
I like that. Are there any tools that, and jumping here a little bit, is there any tools that clubs can work, you have or have at their availability in the ecosystems to track what the health of what's healthy for the athletes or what's good for the athletes to go, other than sight of eye, because sometimes that's not always the best.
Yeah, I think regular check-ins. On our ski team, we have preseason. Especially ask about how things are going, to ask about where we can improve as a club with our deliverables. So I think just that's the other side of that communication coin. We've talked a lot about parents and athletes, but also it needs to be club and athletes checking in regularly, making sure that the trajectory for the athlete, that they don't feel forgotten or lost or trapped. And I think, yeah, we'll just leave it there.
I like that. And then with that being said, the other side of this is we talked about it with my son with his two team option that he's in right now. It's the other thing, siblings, friends, how does that all play into their sport experience from your research and whatnot?
Yeah, so much, especially at the younger ages. Sometimes I think most young athletes are doing it because of the social experience. And they're 14, 16, 18 years old. So create that kind of culture and that type of social experiment, that type of social setting where, gosh, when the season's over, the only thing they're waiting for is the first day of training next year because they want to get back with their peeps on the field or court or ice or snow or rink. Just get them to come back next year. And by creating that culture and that space where the kids want to be together, want to be working hard, want to be pushing each other, you can do that.
I like that. And what, dealing with that, what trends are you now seeing and watching more closely, or gaps that are missing with all this stuff that you're seeing with all your research?
Yeah, one of the really noticeable things is this proliferation or this trickle down, let's say, of the professionalization and the competitive nature of sports. What used to be happening in college is now happening in high school. It used to be happening in high school and club is now happening in junior high and youth sports. So by way of that, we're seeing these competitive outcomes become more valuable and more valued at younger and younger ages. And developmentally, that doesn't jive with where kids are at when they're 6, 8, 10 years old. The downstream effect of that is we're seeing earlier and earlier dropout. Right? What used to be 14, 15, 16 years old is now 11, 12, 13 years old. And part of that is because it's just too much too soon. And the kids aren't enjoying their experience.
I actually was talking to a coach this past weekend, and he was telling me that he has an athlete that performs at a very high level. Like, they could be at the top. And they said, well, they're only in eighth grade. I'm not going to put them at the top level because to compete for the next 4 years of their sports career would put a huge damage on their body. And it's not worth them to do that if their aspiration is to go to college or to compete at some type of level at 16, 17 years old when they're only 14.
Yep.
And that was because I asked a question regarding how do you determine levels for their athletes? It kind of took me back that, like, wow, they actually care. It's not just about their name, like you said, on the back or on the front of the jersey. They truly care about the athlete, that they aren't going to put them in circumstances where they're not ready for it.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. A similar story with my little guy as a skier. When he was 7 as a U8, we had actually asked the association here in the Rocky Mountain region if he could ski up with the U10s. And their answer was no, not because he's not ready, but because if he does that, then he'll need to do the U12s the year after that. And even so, like, where does it end? He'll have to ski 4 years with the U10s, which then the motivation goes severe. So best just to show up, compete against the kids that are your age, and everything kind of balances out down the road. So I think there's a lot of value in getting opportunities to train with and compete against kids that are maybe a level or a notch above you, but at the same time, allowing the kids to have those social, a little bit less pressure opportunities as they're developing and as they're growing into their minds and bodies.
I like that. Now, with all this being said, are you seeing with your research that you're doing and everything else along those lines, what have you seen that's been put into place and now you're seeing the results of it working or did not work, that you might have to make a pivot shift towards something else?
Another really good question. I think one of the things that will always continue to work is to encourage parents to do two things. One, communicate with your athlete. And two, try and take a less adult-centric and more child-centric view of sport in the world. At the very least, if you can do those two things, you're going to be a better youth sport parent. One of the things we've seen not work so well is when we come up with a kind of a one-size-fits-all prepackaged youth sport parent education, and we just shove it down a team's throat and say, do this, it's mandatory, you're going to have a test at the end. Nobody likes that. But I think figuring out an opportunity and a chance to meet parents where they are, to figure out what their needs are, what their desires are, how we might facilitate them becoming better at the things they want to become better at, and then offering that on a kind of a one-by-one basis. But that's difficult to do. There's over 40 million youth participating in sports around the country. So 20 or 30 million parents out there.
No, I totally understand. Looking at this and looking at your research and everything that you've done, I can't remember which paper it was. It was published in a German paper, but I can't remember the details. I'm drawing a blank. I'm so sorry about this. But it's like you learn so much when you start deep diving into these different topics that you've studied and gone down. But I'm going to continue with my next question because I can't remember where I was going with that. What would you define success then from a... look like from the community perspective, because at the end of the day, individual success is met by the individual goals, but within sports, it's a community. And what would you define success to look like?
Does the kid build a lifelong love of moving their body, a lifelong love of their teammates and coaches? When they come back to town from college, do they want to go have lunch with their coach or their teammates? These are the things that are lasting and enduring. Even if a kid's fortunate enough to go play in college or go play professionally, that ends. Right? The average professional career is 2.5 years. Now we're looking at a 24-year-old who's got a big, long, fruitful life ahead of them. In skiing, one of the things I heard one of my mentors say once that really resonated with me was, if my kids come back from their first semester in college and say, hey, Dad, over Thanksgiving break, hey, Dad, let's go skiing. That's a success. They don't hate the sport so much that they don't want to do it anymore. If they love the fact that you've been involved in the journey and they want to go spend a day on snow with you, that's a win. That's a little tougher in team sports. I was a football player. I'm not going to go play football with my dad. If I want to go in the backyard and have a catch, or if I want to just reminisce about old stories, or if you want to do whatever it is that reminds you of the good times that you had, then that's great. And that's a win. As an adult, my wife was a runner in college and she got me into endurance sports. So we've done a number of Ironmans together. It's an opportunity for us to stay connected, to work out, to train, to compete. And I only do that, I think, because of the love and the passion I developed for trying new things and being okay, being terrible at them at first and seeing the daily and monthly and yearly growth and finding something new to fall in love with and moving my body and not being afraid to fail at it. Look, what we want to do is create kids who aren't scared to live their lives. And I think sport is a great vehicle to do that.
I'd love to. I'm going to try to wrap this all up now and bring it all together. So if going back to our initial conversation with your TED Talk, it is... we talked about the ROI, and if parents are still hung up on that part and more of the financial side of it, I'm not talking about the attributes the player may learn. I'm talking scholarships, getting that contract. How would you help them take a step back and look at the bigger picture and look at the long-term goal setting or even short-term goal setting, depending on how old their athlete is, because they could be 16 right now and parents are still caught up on trying to get their kid into the door of a collegiate or a professional contract?
Don't be crazy. Don't be crazy. Know the chances, know the percentages. Know that your kid's going to gain so much more by just being in the game for 8 or 10 or 12 years or 15 years if they're fortunate. They're going to learn so much to prepare them for life, to go be successful in whatever it is they choose to do. Don't spoil that by turning them off to sports when they're 11 years old. It's tough to have that perspective. It's tough to not want what you think is the best for your kid competitively. But what I've learned is that competitive outcomes and interpersonal outcomes are not mutually exclusive, that you can have culture and success athletically, that you can focus on all the good things that come from sports and the competitive outcomes, that you don't have to choose. It's not one or the other. So that's what I would tell parents is just try and envision yourself as the parent of a 25-year-old and what you want that relationship to look like and what you want your child to be and how you think then being the parent of a 6-year-old might help you achieve that.
Awesome. I love that. And what advice or what changes would you think coaches need to do today to make the biggest impact?
Coaches, they need to balance what they feel like or see that the child is getting at home. And what that means is if you see a kid on your team and they're just getting it from all sides at home, you might need to be a source of support and comfort, right? That kid might need the pat on the butt rather than the stern discipline. Vice versa, if you see a kid that has a laissez-faire set of parents that doesn't have a lot of discipline at home, that doesn't really know what, you know, abiding by rules looks like or respect for authority figures looks like, that child might need a little more discipline. And we've all seen really good examples of both. And we've all seen professional athletes who reflect back on a coach, whether it be high school, college, or professional, that reflect on that coach as just intervening at the exact time in that athlete's life when they needed it most, that reset their course or trajectory for success. So coaches have a great power and responsibility to be that kind of missing piece, right? The Shel Silverstein book, The Missing Piece, to be that missing piece for the parents who we can't do it all as parents. And I think that's one of the things I've learned as a parent, that it really does take a village. To find a coach is invaluable who can be that missing piece for your family. And so as a coach, the inverse of that is be that missing piece. Be what the kid maybe isn't isn't getting at home. And that's not to say there's any deficiency. That's just to say that we all need people in our lives to help fill different gaps.
I like that. I really do. I think those gaps are important to be filled with the right people. A few more questions for you. How has your experience as playing in the NFL, researcher, parent shape how you see all this today now?
It's just such a kaleidoscope. I've seen it in the grassroots as a youth athlete. I've seen it from the treetops as a professional athlete and every level in between. I've seen it as a coach, as a baseball coach, as a ski coach. I've seen it now as a parent with my two athletes. I've seen it as a club director. Like, I feel like I really understand now all the competing interests and all the things that make the system go. And that's not even to bring to attention all of the professional work and research that I've done, which of course colors my lens as well. But there are so many types of experience. You can learn by doing research. You can learn by being in the moment and engaged. And you can learn by being thrown to the wolves. And I've done a little bit of all of that. But I think the biggest takeaway for me and for all your parents should be to have some humility about the journey. And that is to understand that you'll never know it all, to understand that you're going to mess up, hopefully just occasionally and not all the time. But we're all fallible. Be big enough to apologize when things go sideways, whether that's apologizing to a coach, to a referee, to your child, understanding that this sport is a context that brings about a lot of human emotion. And we all lose our cool at times. And I think to be big enough to be able to apologize when things go sideways is a great human trait. And I would encourage all of us to be able to do that.
And I skipped this, and I'm so sorry. I really have to backtrack a little here, because sure. I really wanted to wrap it up for you, but COVID changed the youth sports very drastically, and I don't want to have too long of a conversation on this, but what do you think COVID did with redefining what success looks like and within sports?
I don't know. I think my perspective on that is maybe a little shaped by the state that I live in. As you know, COVID was very much defined at a region by region or state by state level. And I think understanding that in many of our conservative states in our country, youth sports went on outside of spring of 2020. By fall, we were just back to the normal. In other states, California comes to mind, it might have been a year and a half or even 2 years where kids were out of school, out of sports. So I think what we're going to see is very differential outcomes across the different states and regions in that regard. How it looks coming back, I don't know. I think having traveled now around the country and even around the world to a certain extent, I think we're sort of back to normal, but we also understand the peril of what might be taken away. We all value youth sports. We all love youth sports. And we know that at the drop of a hat, it'd be taken away. And I think that was something that we didn't recognize maybe before COVID. So I think we hold it a little tighter. We appreciate it a little bit more. And maybe that leads to a little bit more of that craziness of parents, right? Is everybody felt like they had to catch up in the year or two following COVID, right? We missed all these private lessons. We missed all these competitions. We missed all these new things. So parents definitely felt like they had to catch up and make up for lost time.
And is there anything they can do to build resilience before the next big disruption might be? Hopefully we never see one another one in our lifetime, but you never know.
I think these kids are maybe some of the most resilient out there. I always wonder, who will it affect the most? Will it be the kids that were in kindergarten during COVID, or the kids that were in middle school, kids that missed all the big things in high school, kids that missed out on college opportunity on campus? I don't know quite how those are going to play out. I think we'll know in 10 or 20 years as people start doing studies on those different cohorts. But by and large, what I've seen in my college students and in my own kids and in the athletes whom I coach is these are some really resilient young people. And I think that's going to be a great building block for moving forward, both in and out of sport.
I love it. What's the best way to find information about the work you're doing and to find information on you if someone needs to reach out and contact you?
Yeah, great question. Definitely have a digital open door policy. Feel free to shoot me an email, travis.dorsch@usu.edu. Also open on social media to any forms of positive, respectful interactions. I love engaging with folks out there in the real world. We also have a great lab website with all kinds of resources and information, and that's CEHS, which is the College of Education and Human Services, .usu.edu, Families in Sport Lab. And anybody can jump on there and look at all of our research, as well as what's going on in the lab, what student projects are happening, and what our next endeavors are going to be. Definitely look forward to hearing from some of your folks. And
My favorite question, I never share it with anyone until the end. Who has been the greatest influence on you as an athlete, as a coach, and in your the sports psychology profession. You can be multiple different people. That's technically three different questions, but putting it into one.
Oh, definitely my dad. I mean, that's an easy question. He is still alive, was my hero from the time I was a young kid, coached me all the way from Little League all the way through high school and baseball, never missed a game, was always there, supportive, no pressure, was just exactly what I wanted and needed as a parent, support figure, role model, everything. Thinking about the conversation today holistically, that should be every parent's goal when their child is adult and grown, for their child to give that answer, right? And I think my parents did it right, but I've seen a lot of cases where parents do it wrong, and that's something you can't have back. You only get one go at this. And there are points across the journey where you can really mess it up with one thing you say, one thing you do or don't do. And I think being really mindful, being really reflective about the way that you're parenting holds all the power.
Like that. And as a coach and as the profession that you have today also, or did they all the same answer?
When I think back across my coaches, my college football coach at Purdue, Joe Tiller, he was just such a player's coach. He had a knack. He was not trained as a psychologist, but he had a real knack as a student of the universe for understanding what his athletes needed, wanted, how they could be pushed, how to get at the buttons that were deep inside of them. So he always, I think, was a role model in terms of really understanding all 115 of his players at a one-on-one level. And that really modeled for me how I interact today with my students, with my own kids, and with all the athletes that I coach. He was really good at that. And then in terms of professionally, I think towards my mentor, Al Smith, who I took both undergrad and master's and PhD courses from, who mentored me on all of my early research in my career, and really gave me, much like we've described today as a parent might, gave me the space and the freedom to not follow necessarily in his footsteps, but to find my own pathway and to support me in that journey. And that continues today. Just like adult children still need their parents, adult researchers still need them, and I'm grateful for his and my relationship.
That wraps up this two-part series with Dr. Travis Dorsch. There's a lot to take away from these two episodes. Maybe it's the reminder that our kids aren't miniature adults. Maybe it's the culture, not the competition, that is what keeps them coming back. Or maybe it's realizing that success isn't measured in medals, but the confidence, character, and resilience our kids build along the way. Dr. Travis Dorsch said something that stuck with me. Show up, be present, and celebrate the wins and losses equally. That's the heart of it. When parents, coaches, and clubs all align the mindset that when we start to build something bigger than the game. If you enjoyed what Dr. Travis Dorsch shared with Families and Sports Lab at Utah University, he has so many papers and articles that they have written through this program. It's phenomenal. I'll leave all the information in the show notes so you can go grab it. His contact information will be in there for the Sports Lab. So I hope you will reach out if you have any questions for him.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.